Okay, I'm speaking to Doug Prey, a superb documentarian who I first got to say hello to and meet and talk to at length way back in 96, was it? When was the grunge documentary, Doug?
It was 96.
96. And
it was funny because I actually looked that up, too. I was sitting there going, did I meet him on Hype or Scratch? But yeah, no, it was my first film.
Yeah. And I remember that we sat, was it inside a van on Main Street where you did the interviews?
Yeah, we had the Hype Mobile.
That was great, man. I remember that very vividly. And that was one of the real pleasure moments for me, that film. I still think it's a great film. I love that film. And I've told people about it a lot.
Yeah, nice quote, too, that I think I also took to the bank and, you know, always, like, put on our press stuff.
On the DVD, right? I think I saw it once there on the DVD.
I can't remember. You'd think I'd remember, but I know I've used your quote many times whenever I've done, like, promotional stuff, so stuff like that is great. But anyway, cool.
So the interesting thing here, of course, what is novel, I think it's fair to use the word novel, about Surfwise, which is your new film, is that you go into it thinking you're going to be seeing, a surfing documentary, another surfing documentary. We certainly all seen plenty of those. And or a portrait of a kind of the Swiss Family Robinson or a family of happy people whose lives are made more beautiful because they're living, in a sense, in a church. Because surfing is a communion with God. That's absolutely my view of the thing. So, I mean, you're definitely going to get the current of the cosmic in your soul if you surf all the time. So I think, whoa, this is really going to be an up thing. And what is brilliant about your film is that it turns into Heart of Darkness, if that's a fair way to put it. About, I don't know where it is, but at one point you start to go, wait a minute, this is turning around. And it turns around the fact that the paterfamilia of the clan, of the Paskowitz clan, is a bit of a, I think it's fair to use in a certain sense, he's kind of a monster, but, a sort of benevolent monster, has his right. But how would you respond to what I just said?
I agree with that assessment completely. I I love the fact that people are surprised when they get deeper into the movie, and that's kind of how it happened with me, too, you know, just as a filmmaker. Like, at first I thought, well, why not do a surf documentary? I've done every other subculture, and, you know, I might as well do this, and sounds so cynical. I don't really think of films in that way, but, you know, just sure, maybe I should do this, but I'm not a surfer, and I'm not that into surfing, but it was only the family complexity and kind of conflict that made me just totally fascinated. I was like, wow, this isn't a surf film at all.
Yeah.
It's just definitely a movie about a family and a movie about a really intense and very loving but very strict father, and a story kind of about homeschooling and how kids, you know, how different kids' families can be raised. And gosh, it had so many different themes running through it. It just blew my mind. Yeah. I mean, the fact that here was a surf film where there was discussion, there was talk about the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, that alone was just so, you know, or here was a film about homeschooling that actually talks about sex, very frankly, and or here's a film about health and diet there was just all these different themes. It seemed like I could have made a movie about any one of those things, and yet Doc's life and the way his kids were raised kind of incorporated all of them.
It's funny when you come away from it, is that it's certainly a fascinating look, and if you know anything at all about families, if you had kids, it certainly impresses upon you that I was raised in a kind of an affluent area in southwestern Connecticut, and I knew some people who came out of the environment going to high school there and then going off to college and everything. But basically, I think the ease of that situation, it was quite nice living there. Mm-hmm. And you really felt, you really how much better in life are you going to do? A lot of people didn't really do too well in life because they figured, well, I'll just hang back here and be a townie, you know. I was just thinking that as unpleasant and difficult and strenuous, it certainly was in every way for all the kids, all the nine kids, right? How many?
Yes.
Yeah, nine. They all came out pretty well. They did, none of them are, I mean, unless I missed something, none of them seem to be just kind of piddling around and doing nothing with their lives, which is what you see a lot, you know. So I don't know that in the final analysis that the old man was really that bad of a dad, but he just wasn't the you know, he was kind of a autocratic fascist type. You know?
It's just interesting. It is true. And I, the hardest thing was to balance it, because if I'd made a movie that was just saying, you know, like Village of the Happy People, or like here's this great family, and wow, they were raised so unconventionally, and gee, they're all doing great, you know, like half of them are rock stars, half of them are world champion surfers, they're fine, you know. And they are. The thing is, they're survivors. They're all alive. If you met any one of them, any one of the nine, I can say just, you know, and maybe you have actually. They're just great people, just amazing. Like they're bright and they're fun and they're kind of full of life in a really unguarded way.
Yeah.
Partly, you know, I think a lot due to how they were raised. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you know, Dorian Pasquitz is surely one of the most extreme people I've met, one of the most men I've ever interviewed. And the more you get to know the kids, the more you just kind of realize that there's just a very dynamic relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And the film just tries to ask the question, not answer it, like, is that healthy? I'm a dad.
How many kids do you have, Doug?
I have two kids. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these questions come up all the time. It's sort of like, well, do you let the kids, you know, we live in California, and I'm a very easygoing guy, and it's like, well, do we just let the kids do what they want to do? Or do you really put your foot down and say, no, you know, no son of mine's going to do that. It's like, you know, we're going to be this way. And Doc so clearly had that program down for how he wanted to raise his kids. But I guess the thing that's interesting is like, I had no, you know, this certainly isn't capturing the Friedmans or something. Like, it's not like this, oh my God, there's all these dark, twisted. But on the other hand, there's quite a few people who see the movie who say afterwards, or say to me, or whatever, they say, I think that man was awful, you know, just awful. And I can't, you know, that's what they say, and that's based on kind of what they, you know, their perception of whether that was right or wrong. And I think they're probably talking more about the living conditions. Sometimes they're talking about the fact that, as the movie says quite clearly, that, you know, they...
Let me give a boilerplate before we go any farther, Doug.
Yeah,
let me just repeat a boilerplate description, which is basically the guy, his name is Doc. His full name is Dorian.
Dorian, Dorian Pasquitz.
And he grew up in... Oh, I've just forgotten where he grew up.
Galveston. He was born in Galveston, Texas, which alone is interesting because he's Jewish. And... Right.
But when did he get to Hawaii? I'm forgetting that part.
Well, he moved to San Diego when he was 10.
Right.
So he really was one of those original groups of 1930s surfers.
Right.
Which was kind of the kickoff of the real, you know, like a bunch of people surfing in California. And when did he go to Hawaii? I think it was in the early 50s.
Mm.
Maybe even the late 40s. You know, I should know that, but I don't. But it was, he went to Stanford, and then he got assigned to do some stuff in Hawaii, I think, through the military.
And he was very much, for those who haven't seen it, this man was very much a straight arrow, very hardworking, very respected man in his field. And he certainly wasn't, you know, a hand-to-mouth guy. He was a you know, fully responsible, middle-class dad. But he
He was a surfer before, so in some ways he was returning to those roots.
Yeah, I guess so.
But yeah, I mean, the movie, you know, movies are made to be dramatic, and so, you know, there's all sorts of little conflicts. But the fact is, it is, it is true. I mean, he had some miserable marriages in Hawaii, and he had to get out of there, and he had to go kind of find himself again, and in a very classic way, he did that by going to Israel for a year.
Which was in the early 60s, right?
He did that in, like, 19... It's funny. I always get the years confused, but it was definitely in the late 50s. I think it was 59 that he went to... Okay. I think it was 59 that he met his wife. It was probably, like, the year or two before that he went to Israel.
Beautiful woman, his wife.
Oh, she's amazing.
She looks... her ethnic extract, her derivation is... she looks part Indian. I'm trying to remember. She was...
She's Mexican-Indian.
Mexican-Indian. Really beautiful.
And she's a Mexican American, okay. And you know, I don't know too much about her family's past. Doc always calls her a Mexican Indian and a savage, but that's just Doc. He sort of talks like that about everybody. It's a little crazy.
Anyway, so the thrust of it is that basically, instead of taking the kids to school, they basically just took them around the country, living a kind of a vagabondish life, you know, surfing here and there. But the appalling thing for me are two things. It's not that the being the Brady Bunch on the road. That's actually kind of interesting. You know, you can find many people who will tell you that the American school system is not ideal for, you know, racing. I feel I genuinely suffered in the American school system. So there's a part of me that loves what these guys did.
Right.
They did it inside this camper. I mean, if I were going to do this with 9 kids? Give me a break. First of all, if I was going to do this and I had this idea, I would have, what, 3 kids maybe? 4 at the tops? They had 9, and they go out in this camper that should have been a Gulfstream, one of those silver things that, you know, could handle at least so everybody has some kind of space.
But he had no money. He rejected money along with it, so he just did.
Well, how did they get... I mean, that's what I wasn't getting, Doug. How, you know, they would stop somewhere and get money. How? I mean, that's what I was trying.
A little bit of money. They just made enough money to live by. They made enough money at surf camps in the summer.
Yeah.
In the winter, he would drive all over the country and go be a doctor in these strange little places.
Okay.
And it's mentioned in the movie, but he was a doctor. I mean, he would go to, like, North Dakota and be a doctor in some little town for two months where they needed a doctor.
Right.
He would go, there was some magazine called Option, and you could go find little assignments, and they would just go do that, and they would make a little bit of money. But it was definitely only the money that they barely needed, and all of them have you know, told me on no uncertain terms that they were definitely living at or just above the poverty level for most of those years.
But something about surfing a lot and being in that environment, I would imagine, that it would make it feel very unimpoverished, because it's just something so nurturing and...
Of course, yeah. Well, that's the one thing that was interesting. Doc told me this just... He said this on a radio interview. We were in New York last week doing some stuff, and he said to the person, he said, you know, honestly... The big change was when they went through puberty. Like for all of the kids, sort of from 0 through whatever 12, it really was idyllic. And I think that's sort of, even now that I'm finished with the movie, now I'm kind of understanding better, like, really how it went down. And it was like, when they were little, it really was bliss.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure there was hard days and everything, but it just, you know, it was kind of like, it was fun. They just didn't know better.
Right.
It was when they got older and became teenagers that all of them had their own little mutiny, and they wanted out. They wanted to eat donuts, or they wanted to meet girls in the city, or, you know, whatever. They just wanted to get out of there. And so I think that a lot of the angst and a lot of the kind of maybe darker things in the film, you know, are really more reflecting what any family's going to go through in that kind of rebellion. So in some ways, the movie I'm not trying to say, wow, this family was, their rebellion was so completely ridiculous and absurd. It's more that if you live very intensely, the rebellion's going to be intense too. And I think that David, the oldest son, you know, he kind of had so much intensity. I'm overusing the word intensity. He had so much of the responsibility of the family was put on his shoulders that his rebellion just took an extremely... It took a bit more of a dramatic arc, and therefore, when he speaks in the movie, it just has it just adds a lot to the movie because he's the firstborn. It's almost kind of a biblical thing. It's like, you know, you've got the father and the caravan of children, and then the firstborn was supposed to, you know, kind of take over the whole thing, and it just didn't work. It just didn't really quite work, you know.
The other thing that I think that most people would have a problem with in general is Doc and his wife were very much sensualists and did not have the trace of the typical routine middle class, you know, it's kind of, you know, brush it under the carpet feelings about sexuality.
Not at all.
And so the kids consequently listened to them go at it each and every night for I don't know how many years. But my God, you know, I'm going to have to call my mother someday soon and discreetly tell her, I'm so glad that you and Dad never made me listen to anything after watching this film.
It's amazing. Well, that's one thing a lot of people just find completely unacceptable. And they don't think it's funny or cute or, you know, it's just like that.
Well, obviously the kids are okay, you know. They're not walking around, you know, I mean, I say that.
They are. In Doc's defense, and please don't quote me as having said this, but what Doc will say again and again is, and he says this in the movie, he's like, look, we're just like, you know, you go to Pakistan and you know, you find homes that have 15 people living in them and the mother and father are somewhere in there and they're intimate at some point. You know, I mean, or in the movie, I guess the actual quote is, he says something like that, we live like the Mongolians lived. I mean, you know, you have a little tent and the parents make love and the kids giggle and laugh and he's just like, come on, that's normal. Our society is completely not normal. And he flips everything on his head. He thinks everything in our society is completely backwards and that the way we're supposed to live is in these groups, in these large family groups, just like the apes, and that's how we're supposed to eat and that's how we're supposed to live. And you're supposed to exercise a lot every day and run around and have a lot of fun and sleep a lot and eat very little food and, frankly, have a lot of sex.
Hey, listen, man. Not eating very much food, exercising a lot, sounds good to me. I think that's a, you know...
That's the thing. I agree with most of what Doc says 100%.
Right.
You know we're all eating too much, and you know our society is unhealthy because of that, and I don't disagree with his diet plans or his general thoughts at all about that, you know?
Uh-huh, right.
It's kind of interesting.
Well, if there's one malady that's affecting our country, it's that people eat about 3 or 4 times more food than they really need, and this is...
That's what causes most heart disease, causes most, diabetes, a lot of things.
Right.
And, you know, if he's the kind of guy that'll come up... It's been years since you and I met, but, you know, I'm 6'2", and I don't know what I weigh, but I'm not very heavy. I'm kind of, basically, you describe me as tall and thin.
Yeah.
He'll come up to me and, like, if I've been in the editing room maybe a couple weeks too much, and, like, he sees, if he can pinch any fat on my, like, he'll pinch me and just go be like, you know, you're fat. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, like, what, are you trying to kill yourself? And by the way, it's making you stupid.
Right.
So, like, if you eat less, and then it's all... Yeah. Medical theories that your brain is better and you can act better and you can, you know, like he, if he sees a president of a country who's overweight, his view is that that country is going to hell, because how could that leader, you know, that leader is not using his full capacities of his brain or anything else. It's amazing. I mean, it's kind of funny in some ways, and on the other hand, he's 100% serious, and he's that way around everybody.
You know, I liked him very much in the beginning, particularly. He's 84? 87. 87 now.
21.
And, you know, my poor dad, he's in that general vicinity, and, I mean, most people do start to fail at that point, but this guy is... He's got some problems, but he's doing pretty well for an 87-year-old, it seems to me.
Very healthy. He really is. He gets around.
Yeah. By the way, I heard them mention there was some reference to time in which someone referred to a date, and I put it together in the beginning, and it sounded like you began shooting this thing in 04. Or 05.
Idea came to me, I was approached in late 2002. Mm-hmm. It took us 3 years to kind of get the funding together. Mm-hmm. In 2004, I met Doc for the first time because I went out there to film just a fundraising promo, which is not that uncommon for my documentaries. I need to shoot something to show people what we're talking about.
Right.
And so I went out to Hawaii and I did a bunch of interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, I shot in the wrong format because let me put it this way. I shot in a format that I couldn't use later because we had to deliver high def. And
why can't you just go for the grainy thing initially? Why do you have to shoot high def? Why can't you?
It was a requirement of HD Net Films.
Oh, okay.
And it was just one of those delivery requirements.
Oh.
And so, right. you know, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Yeah,
I was extremely happy that we were getting funding. Right. Most of my movies, I've made the movie first and then shopped it around, you know, taken it to festivals and things. This was the first movie where it was really a different thing. It was like, wow, we have funding and we're going to make this film, and it's for HD Net Films and Magnolia. So anyway, but all of that, I don't know why I was saying that. I know, in 2004, I met those guys and did a bunch of interviews. A lot of that audio I was able to use in the actual movie, which was kind of nice.
I'm not mentioning, and I should get into this before we go any further. There's a moment when the movie starts to take its dark side, when the conflict and the resentments and, you know, the idea and the reality that Doc is not he's not quite the admirable fellow that you are led to believe initially. His eldest son, I believe, and I'm forgetting his name now, but
David
performs a song for the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Initially he's doing it, he's just speaking the lines, as I recall.
Right.
And there's music playing in the background, but somehow...
He's singing me a song that he had written.
Yeah.
For his dad.
Yeah.
And it just kind of got very emotional, and he just kind of took over, and he just started singing right to the camera.
And it's a rage song. It's like like, you know, I'm going to kill you, old man. You know, you have to die. You know, because your influence is pernicious. It's pretty rough. You know, and it's
definitely a psychological low point of the film. We didn't put it in the trailer because it's one of those scenes I don't like to give away. But it's like, it's said more than any interview ever could. It just said, look, if you live this intensively, there's going to be a price that's paid.
Yeah.
I believe that's true of even the greatest ideas and the greatest men and women. You know, the people who live the most by their ideals, there just is a price to pay. And I feel like in some ways, some of the kids, you know, more than others, are able to express what that price might have been. David doesn't express exactly what it was, but he sure does express it as there. You know what I mean?
And I like, I don't know if that reunion was done for the benefit of the film, because it's a good way to end the film, but that's a nice thing at the end. They all meet in Hawaii.
Both. I mean, we didn't plan it, and, you know, it was definitely their idea, but obviously we were all over it. I mean, you know, I was like, wow, I got a third act. If they're actually going to get together for the first time in a decade, it's a big deal. I would love to film it.
Right.
So I was incredibly encouraging of that kind of thing. And, you know, I mean, filmmakers and their subjects work together all the time.
Yeah.
So a few people have cynically criticized that as being like some sort of a Hollywood false ending. And I'm like, well, I don't know what's false about it. They're actually having a reunion. It's the first time they've ever been together in 10 years.
Yeah, right.
So, and it's pretty emotional when they get together. And you can kind of see that not all is really well, but they are together.
Right.
So that's my views of that. But, yeah, it was sort of both. They, you know, they wanted to do it, and I was thrilled. I didn't want to just end on some sour note, like, okay, you know, the dream is over. It was a waste of time. What's the point? That seemed like a stupid movie to make. In the end, even if people are upset at Doc's behavior, I still want the film to be, on some level, inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe make people think about health and maybe make them want to get out more and surf. or maybe pursue their crazy dreams of their own. Like, you know, maybe they will, they should do something less conventional.
Now, Doug, I'm going to be flying to, I'm flying to New York tonight. Otherwise, I would be attending the press day.
Oh.
Which is on Tuesday, Monday?
It's on, yeah, it's actually tomorrow morning.
And you're, and part of the press day, which is great, is that if people, if journalists want to, anybody participating in this thing, can and want to bring a wetsuit, then they'll actually get a surfing lesson.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
Yeah, I'd love that. You know? So that's that sounds that would have been really great to have attended, and I love that you're having it also on the Santa Monica Pier, which is you know, atmospherically correct. So.
Yeah, it's just different. That was Karen Oberman's idea. I thought it was great.
Yeah. So you're going out to that that restaurant at the very end or something?
I don't know. I'll just show up at 8 and we'll see where they pull us around. But it should be fun.
Right.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Then we have our big kind of premiere party on Tuesday night. But that's too bad. You'll miss that.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. But it's kind of I do a warm up to you know, going to Cannes next weekend.
Oh yeah.
Or rather, a week from Monday. And history has taught me that, you know, if you go to New York and get used to that time zone a little bit, I just hate that big, long 10-hour plane trip and you're all screwed up for a couple of days.
Totally, yeah.
It's better when you do it that way. So.
Yeah, and I just came back. I was in Lithuania all last week.
Why?
Hard to believe, but I was.
What is there?
I made another movie named Big Rig, which is about truck drivers.
Lithuanian truck drivers? Eastern European truck drivers?
No. No. Not at all, actually. It's a very American film. It's all about long-haul truck drivers in the United States, and it's coming out in June through Screen Media. And actually, I'd love to show it to you, but it's, you know, that's a different publicist and a different thing, and the timing.
Who's the distributor again, Doug?
Screen Media.
Okay.
I have a website. If you want to go, you can read about it. If you go to DougPrey.com, you can read about it.
Okay.
It's not really my intention to pitch you on Big Rig on this phone call.
No, I'd love to see that. Thanks for telling me. Maybe when I get back in early June, we could show it or something. How close to done is it?
It's finished. It's coming out. It's being released in June on DVD, and we're doing this whole truck stop tour with it and all this stuff. It's just, the timing is just weird because it's sort of like Surfwise is right happening exactly when that movie's coming out. It's driving me crazy. But having said that, I was in Lithuania with a program through AFI called 2020 that's like a cultural exchange and just a way for people in countries who have a very lacking understanding of American culture to see independent films and just really different views of American culture than they normally get through the mainstream media. So it was kind of cool, actually. We just had a couple screenings and taught some classes, and it's interesting. But anyway, I digress. That's definitely off the subject.
Well, when in June? Can you tell me? Is it late or mid or?
Oh, the release?
Yeah.
It is being made available on June 3rd.
I get back on the 2nd.
Uh-huh.
There isn't any way to get...
It's not like a big premiere. We premiered at South by Southwest last year, and then it's sort of been to different festivals. We went to Silver Docks and AFI Fest, and I mean, it's...
Was there a way to? I'll be in New York for, as I said, for 7 days. Is there a way to, get a?
Of course.
A disc from somebody in New York, or is there somebody?
Very easily. I have a publicist there, and she'd be more than happy to get a copy to you.
All right. Well, who do I?
I will, if I can. You know, actually, I have your email address. Can I just have her contact
you? Sure, yeah, that would be good. And then I could physically pick it up, whatever. That would be perfect, Doug. Then I could.
Yeah, no, she can just messenger one to your hotel or whatever.
Yeah.
And if not, I can FedEx you one. But let's have it come through the proper thing. Then it'll come with all of whatever you want with it.
That's
but
great.
That's cool. I appreciate your interest in that as well.
Anyway, an excellent piece, Doug. I thought Surfwise is something that I think anybody who's ever had kids, who's ever been in a family, it's just one of those things that you are going to talk a lot about if you see it. And it's really one of those films that, and the better documentaries always start out to be something, and like a good drama or good comedy, you know, there's a lot more to it than you anticipate. And that's the thing about this film. So
I'm really glad you liked it. I really am. It means a lot to me.
Yeah. All right, Doug. Well, thank you very much for your time. I look forward to getting the disc of the other film, the truck driver thing. And I'm sorry again. I'm not going to be at the thing, but I hope that Surfwise does well. And it was good hearing from a friendly voice.
All right. Excellent. Thank you so much for your time.
Take care.
All right. Bye.